I'm wrestling, do not weep for me. Celebrate what I am. Celebrate what I have been. Celebrate what I represent. And celebrate the many ways I have impacted your life. I will survive this test as I have survived others. I am forever etched into the very fiber of all mankind. The world needs me. Time is on my side. History guarantees me. I am wrestling. Do not wait for me.
What's going on, everybody? You're listening to episode number 74 of the T-Row and Funky Show, brought to you as Defense Soap. Defend what you have built and Dahlmer Mats. Tommy, we are coming off, in my opinion, what's one of the best world team trials I've seen. Maybe I might say the best world team trials I've seen. Obviously, there's been some high drama ones. But with three of the matches in the finals going to the final third match, that all of which were very high drama. Man, I guess, can you remember one that was this good?
No, and I mean, I was at a country concert with my wife and some friends. Didn't get to take it all in live, but I obviously followed it all. And then adding to that, hold on one second here, Ben.
One of the best single legs in the world, and we are underway.
Adding to that, watched a lot of the matches today. Just insane results. You know, on top of it being the most exciting, I think it might be the best American team we've ever had. Not ever. In quite some time.
In quite some time, and that's fair. And obviously, we're going to have to wait and see what the results are before we call that in. So let's go, before we go to the results, and you know, Tommy, we might have to turn this into two episodes because there's just between the senior tournament, the finals, and I want to focus on the finals, and the junior event, there's just so much to talk about that I don't know that we're going to get it all in. So we'll see where we get tonight, and then wherever we get, if we feel like there's more, we'll do another show, and if there's not, there's not.
I feel you. I'm in.
So I want to go to this because I actually put up a Facebook Live post today about – kind of the economics of wrestling, because early morning, I got to my camp early. I had some extra time, so I went Facebook Live, kind of did a quick recap of the finals. There was a few texts I got, a few posts on there, just kind of about why is Flo charging for the event, and a bunch of different stuff. And so I went ahead and did a second Facebook Live post about the economics of the sport of wrestling. And so, I want to say last night was one of the most well-produced portions of wrestling I've seen. It was almost 4 hours uncut straight wrestling, Tommy. And, you know, we can say that's not a feat. We're not getting it on TV, Tommy. I mean, you know, if you remember the olden days, World Team Trials and U.S. Open was on tape delay, usually by about 3 weeks. And we get about an hour of coverage, which covered a snippet of highlights from different matches, but nothing uncut like we got last night. So, you know, to the viewer out there that's listening, and I don't know how you want to analyze Tommy, but, you know, Flo is a great advance. Do they mess up sometimes? Yeah, of course. But we also have to give credit where credit is due, and they produced an outstanding event last night, and they were the highest bidder. I mean, that's just what it comes down to, right? And so right. All events have rights fees. And it's on USA Wrestling to build their event to where it generates a greater rights fee from broadcast partners.
Uh-huh.
And so Flo's the highest bidder right now, and they nailed it. They did a great job. They gave us 4 hours of uncut wrestling. So for all you wrestling fans who say wrestling has to be on TV, I think you're dead wrong. I think Flo did a great job. And obviously they paid the highest rights fee for the event, so that's why they got it.
No, if you're paying attention to what's going on in sports media, sports – There could be a chance that television is a secondary market in 20 years compared to what you can stream.
I'm thinking like five.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I guess, yeah, it could be. ESPN is hemorrhaging their business right now. They're trying to figure out how they, continue to push the envelope. I wouldn't say for relevancy because they're still the dominant media source. But what's happening on the internet in all sports, let alone the fringe sports that have an underground following very similar to wrestling, it's all going down the internet. So what Flo is doing is what's happening in the world with cable television, with everything. with Netflix and Hulu and this and that. I mean, everybody on traditional television is scratching their head right now. So I agree. I think USA Wrestling did a great job in identifying the right partner, probably commanding the right revenue, because USA Wrestling is just a dollars and cents organization oftentimes because they have to be. So there's no way they were doing that for Flow Wrestling for any other reason than to generate more revenue, generate more visibility for the sport. And I thought Flow, again, I didn't watch it live, but I've watched, you know, probably about 15 matches now from the weekend, and it just seems like it was produced at a really high level.
Yeah, it was awesome. So I was in Kansas City. I did a wrestling camp and visiting the wife's family, and my wife and I went on a date, and I did convince her to watch all the finals. So I think I watched everyone. I think the only one I missed was the Kennedy Green second match. We were walking into the restaurant, and I said, listen, we got to get in here by the time Cox and Taylor's up on the next match. So, you know, I'll turn this one off. Let's get in here. Let's get seated, and then I can put the damn show back on. And so I followed for almost 4 hours straight, and got, there really wasn't, you know, Snyder was underwhelming because it was just such a mismatch, right? And the heavyweights didn't get me super excited. But
it is amazing. It is amazing that it was a mismatch, though, Ben. I mean, Kyle Snyder was 0-2 against Gadsden going into the match, lost in the Vegas tournament in Folkstyle, then got pinned in the NCAA finals, and he beat him 23-2 2 years later. And I know it's a different style. I know the Kyle Snyder of today is different than 2 years ago, but that still is quite a statement.
Yeah, it is. But I mean, I guess you know, kind of. But we also knew what to expect, right?
Yeah, in comparison to everything else that happened this weekend, it's not even news.
Yeah, it's not. You know, but Kyle Snyder is just. I mean, you know, he was 18 when he got beat by Kevin Gadsden. He's just made such gigantic improvement. 18 or 19, he's made such gigantic improvements since then that. You know, I don't know. I have a hard time seeing, and maybe I'm exaggerating. Maybe the weight class has changed and Jaden has to go up. I don't know. But I have a hard time seeing him with a competitive match in the United States in a while. I mean, who's going to challenge him? That 97 kg bracket's weak. I mean, once you go below Gadsden, I mean, Hayden Zilmer, who hasn't wrestled freestyle competitively, took top three and made the national. He's the first guy to make the national team in both styles since Sam Hazelwinkle.
Yeah, no, I'm not seeing a solid opponent yet that can prove, you know, to compete with Kyle.
Yeah. So, and the other thing,
by the way, I'm catching the third match while I'm talking to you of Jaden and Taylor.
It's awesome.
Jaden's takedown from the single leg when he went up and under like a Russian, yeah. Almost like.
Well, insane. You know what? They didn't score the takedown. They scored the near fall. If you, I was confused on that again. Flo shows a replay of it. I actually asked Martin for slow mo replay and zoom in replay also last night. He said they're going to work on making that happen. but he gets the exposure points there because Taylor rolls across his butt.
Yep.
But wait, it's about to get high drama. You don't even know, Tommy.
I'm watching the injury. I'm mind blown with the reaction. It's like, geez.
I there's not a final word on what the injury is right now. I think it's a hamstring injury. Just that, you know, that is a position that I do use frequently, and I know there's a few times where it has put a decent amount of pressure on my hamstring. Luckily, I'm flexible, and Jaden's ultra flexible. So you know, hopefully that diagnosis. Hopefully that diagnosis comes back is not that bad. So
could be ACL.
You think so? I mean, that's obvious. Yeah, I guess it could be that also. So
could just be a really bad hyperextension too.
Yeah, let's just knock on wood and hope it's not that bad. Because I know he was on crutches for the photos last night. That's not a guy who fakes it. So the other point I wanted to make before we really get into these matches is. You know, this could be the last year that we see some of these matches. You know, if they go to the 10 weight classes like they've been discussing, I think you could see Dake and Burrow separate, and I think you could see Cox and Taylor separate. You know, because they're talking about going 70, 70, 75, 80, 85, 90, right? So right, we could really right. see, you know, Dake go up to 80, Taylor stay at 85, Jaden would go up to 90. And
we'd
then,
be awesome. I'll tell you that much.
And I think that they were saying it was going to go 100, then heavyweight. So then obviously Kyle would be the 100 kg.
Right.
So you know that would obviously it would be bad for our viewing purposes because I would enjoy seeing those matches again.
Right.
But it would also be great for America and great for those athletes. It sucks that Kyle Dake's not on the world team. It sucks that David Taylor's not on the world team because I would love to see those guys go compete. And you know, I don't wanna bust on the UWW, but if we had the wild card format that maybe they can steal from me, right? Where you can score points, and the top 4 point scorers who aren't the representative will then make the world championship. Also, David Taylor would be one of those guys. This dude's won everything the last year.
Oh yeah, he's got a win over Donny Cheridi, the Azerbaijani guy, yep. Sharifov. He won the World Cup.
I mean, he's going to the World Championships for sure. If there's a couple wild card spots, so I think we could see these guys separate, which is both fortunate and unfortunate at the same time. Lastly, one more time before we get into these matches, I want to say because I've been critical of the referees. The refereeing last night, I thought was freaking outstanding. There was no correct throw calls. There was very, very little caution and twos at the referee's discretion, which I was happy about. So I thought the referee's outstanding. I don't really know what the guy's name is, Tommy. The stockier guy from Ohio, he's pretty well built. I think he's my favorite referee.
Jim Spielman, I think, is the guy you're talking about, but I'm not positive on that.
Okay, he's shorter, stocky, got short hair, pretty well built. He's outstanding. But yeah, the refereeing was really, really good last night. There was a couple calls. You know, the one call that I disagreed with, and they went back and they got it right, was that they gave Dake the takedown at the end of the third match, which was not a takedown, absolutely not. And they went back and corrected and gave him a push out, which made the match 5-4. And that was
a push out, flat out.
Absolutely the right call. So it was, you know, it was outstanding to watch them go correct themselves. And you know that might have been a little home cooking, but it was the right call for sure.
Yeah, I don't think it was home cooking though. I mean, I don't see how it was too.
I want to say that what I meant by that is because it is the correct call is that the crowd was obviously encouraging the referees to make call, right? Okay. If that's freaking in Ithaca, New York, they're going freaking nuts for the 2 points, and the referees, like it or not, they're swayed by that, right? They've proven that in professional football.
Yeah, I know what you mean now by the home cooking. I feel you on that.
But yeah, I think absolutely only a push out. Okay, so. You got anything else you want to talk about before we get into these matches?
No, man. I mean, I've watched, like I said, I think I've watched about 15 matches. I'm finishing up the Cox-Taylor one as we speak here. But I thought the officiating was good. I thought it was a good production. I tell you what, the local promoters affiliated with USA Wrestling to put 5,000 people in the stands did a great job.
Yeah, and obviously they got what they wanted because they got two Nebraska guys on the team, right?
Yeah.
And that was part of what made the atmosphere so electric is obviously the Burroughs, you know. James Green made the world team, but he ain't the hero. Jordan Burroughs is the hero in that arena.
No doubt.
And for him to have such a wild competitive series, I mean, that crowd was freaking on the edge of their seats every second of those matches.
Yep.
So let's start with the little guys then.
So we're skipping Snyder and Gwiz. Congrats to them, right?
We'll get to them at the end if we have some time left. But
right.
Let's start with So I was confused. Well, okay, let's get up to this before the match. I was slightly confused because what they did was they essentially made Snyder the main event, right? So in the first two. Burroughs did end up being the last match because he went to three matches and Snyder did not, right?
Right.
So they went weight class order, heavyweight, starting back at the beginning. But then after 70, oh my gosh, 70 kilo, James Green, they skipped to Cox versus Taylor, went back then to Burroughs versus Dake, and then went to Snyder Gadsden, right? And so right. I was thinking, hey, if you're going to switch the order – we're in freaking Lincoln, Nebraska. I get that Kyle Snyder won Olympic gold medal, but Jordan Burroughs is the main event in this arena.
Right.
So I figured, hey, if you're not going to run it in direct weight class order, let's just put Burroughs at the end. And obviously, it ended up that way because Burroughs, Taylor, and Cox, and Molinaro, Rutherford went to a third match. And so it did end up that he was, in the end, the main event, right? But I thought they should have put him there in the first place.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Sorry, I was listening to what you're saying, but I just watched the end of the Taylor.
Crazy, right?
It's just what a match.
Do you want to start with that series?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay,
do it.
Since you just watched it, it's so fresh in your mind. Yep. You know, obviously that first match, I think Jaden came out a little slow. And honestly, you know, a lot of people talk about, and Tommy, we've both wrestled in this on both sides of it, so we can both speak on this. I kind of feel like sometimes going through the mini tournament is almost better, especially in that first match, you know.
Well, you would never, because I've sat out and I've also had to go through the mini tournament, so and made the finals both times. Three times actually. And so I've experienced both sides, and I would say this, depending on how your mini tournament goes, it could be an advantage for you or not.
Sure.
But it depends on how that mini tournament goes.
Yeah.
Because if you're in four dogfights,
yeah, 100%.
Emotional roller coasters, then it's never an advantage. But if it's basically a tune up going into the finals, then you could be better off than the guy who sat out.
Yeah. Yeah, and so I think, you know, I think in that first match, that played a factor. David seemed significantly more ready to go than Jade did. Jane kind of started off slow. He got behind. And then in that second period, and this is what kind of made the match seem a little far, far away, even though it wasn't close, he made an uncharacteristically stupid mistake when he tried this really unnecessary chest wrap, and he gave up 4 points off of it. You know, which kind of put the match out of reach, essentially. You know, totally something he totally didn't need to do, kind of a bad decision. And so it made the match seem like it was far apart when it really wasn't that much of a blowout, right?
Right.
But so, you know, I thought Jaden started really slow in that match. And then obviously matches two and three, he came out, in my opinion, with a different pace.
Yeah. Jaden really impressed me. You know, what's funny is that going into the series, if you would have told me that Taylor would be able to move Cox the way that he moved him in all three matches from the neutral position, I would have said he would have had a field day on Jaden. So I was shocked by how much he was able to get head position, control the tie-ups. Not control the ties, but just have some control in tie-ups.
Yeah,
with someone as big and physical as Jaden, and he was able to accomplish that. And so what surprised me was that, one, David did that, and two, Cox stayed with it, and he was able to wrestle with Taylor coming off of that head, diving down to ankles, lots of level fakes. I just didn't think that Jaden would be able to keep up with David, but I also didn't predict that David would even be able to move Cox that way. Yeah. So there's a lot of things that happened in the series to me that I would have never predicted going in.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things that really, I mean, it's a huge thing, and I don't know how guys are going to combat it, but one of the things that stuck out to me in the Taylor Cox match was Jaden can get like within 2 inches of that out of bounds and turn on a dime. Did you see how many times he did it? It was like mind blowing. Like he just had this third sense about he was, and it wasn't like he's turning 2 feet off the line, dude. He's turning like inches. He's getting inches from the line and turning. And it was amazing to me how precisely he could do it over and over and over again. I mean, it just happened. It happened. It happened. Happened. So that was really impressive. I guess I could have foreseen David moving him around so much because, number one, David's really good at that. Number two, Jaden kind of goes with the flow sometimes, right? He's willing to kind of move with it and almost give up position sometime just to create action, if you will.
Right.
And, you know, you see in the match, David has a – and actually this is something – Wrestling Nomad. He sometimes pops on the FRL podcast. He made a comment about his, you know, in the matches that David's lost, which is not a lot, right, over the past how many years, it's all on guys he's had trouble finishing on. You know, Dake being obviously the key one. Dake is a guy David was able to get on a lot of times but was not able to finish on.
And
the same thing happened with Jaden last night is he was in on a lot of shots that he didn't finish, and that's the difference in the match there.
If I was going to be critical of David, which I am because that's the point of the podcast, but I'm not in the sense that I think he's an animal, I would say that he wasn't as committed to his attacks as he normally is. I saw some hesitation even when he was in, he wasn't coming in full speed, both guns blazing the way that I know that he can.
Yeah.
So there must have been something about what he felt out there or about what he kind of was hesitant about with Cox, because I just didn't see him flying in there on his attacks the way that he normally does. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I guess I would say that I would think the hesitation would be Jaden has some of the most amazing down block go behinds. There's that one picture of him from the Olympics where he's like in the middle of the air and like hitting this angled go behind in the middle of the air. I mean, he's so good there. And, you know, he did get to some of those positions last night, and David was able to wrestle out of them. So I think that was probably why David kind of slowed it down and didn't, to your point, didn't have as many attacks as he usually does. Right. Yeah, and so then in the third match, let's go to this third match. And so, you know, Jaden gets up early. David comes back and gets this takedown on the edge. Or I think it was a pushout. I don't believe it was a takedown.
Well, we cannot skip Jaden's first, it wasn't a takedown, but it was an exposure.
Yeah. Okay, that was pretty awesome.
I mean, he had a lifted single, and he went underneath the ankle. And then I think he was trying to go back over and over top and do that standing cradle that some of the Russians do.
Yes.
And instead, it just turned into a great flurry that he got the exposure from. But that was a freakish skill done on a world class wrestler in David Taylor for all the marbles.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to put yourself into context of what's. I mean, this is match three of the World Team Trials versus David Taylor. Jaden Cox has a lifted single in the air, and he ducks up under and tries to go over top that leg. It's borderline a clinic move, Ben. And
I've seen Jaden do it a handful of times, so I'm going to go ahead and say he's pretty good at it.
No, I've done it before too, but not with all of them. It's a great skill. I mean, it is a great skill. I don't think it's as like clinicky and trashy as some people think.
No, definitely not.
Because if you do, if you do get underneath and you come back over, the guy's done for.
And or the other one is, you know, sometimes I've seen him go to the other ankle and he can lace it up from there too.
Wow.
Yeah.
It was insane.
Yeah. So that was right at the end of the first. And then so it's almost right at the end of the second where David gets the leg up. Jaden goes to his splits position. And then, you know, we still don't know exactly what was wrong. I'm waiting to hear the exact diagnosis. But, you know, goes down, is kind of writhing in pain on the floor. I honestly thought he was done. I thought he blew his hamstring and he's out. But then my wife says, oh, he's done for sure, right? We're at dinner. And I'm like, well, I guess what has he got? Why would he give up, right? I mean, there's nothing after this, right? Nothing to be smart about. You just throw caution in the wind and say, well, I'm going to wrestle if I can. And I didn't expect a lot of him. And I saw someone make a point about this, I think, on Twitter. But it also looks like David thought he was going to throw in the towel. And David kind of turns down the intensity on him, right?
Right.
For a little while there. And then I think David thinks, like, shit, he's still moving well. Like,
right.
And he almost kind of hits this panic switch, so he takes the intensity down and then he hits the panic switch. And then it was just like, too little too late. And I know David was pissed that Cox wasn't put on the shot clock. And I could have seen that, and I was kind of nervous that call was coming, but that's still only going to be a point, right?
Right.
So, I guess Jaden wins it fair and square. I mean,
yeah, but here's the thing. I mean, he did win it fair and square. In the sense, I mean, he wrestled great, but I don't know, Ben. When I watched that second period, I think that there could have been some calls made for David.
Are you talking about because he's been slow back to the center? What exactly are you?
Shot clock or cautions? They're just what I mean. I think what happened a little bit, even maybe to you or me, not just the ref,
is that
since we know that he was legitimately injured, just flat out legitimately injured, it's almost like everyone knew why he was not engaging in any type of, you know what I mean? So it was like since you knew why, you didn't perceive it as stalling per se. But as I watched that, I mean, Jaden did a good job on some counterattacks, but there was not much going forward. I just think out of all the calls that I heard that could have been better last night when I was not watching but reading on Twitter, that's the one that, you know, a lot of people gave David a lot of gaff for conducting himself, and, you know, they were kind of insinuating that he was being a crybaby, and I didn't even get to watch enough of that to even be the judge.
I didn't see that either. I think I might have turned away, and I was like,
I didn't see it either. But
listen, F it. David can be a crybaby. I mean, you know, listen, I'd be pissed too. This is what, the fourth year he hasn't made the team. This dude's got high expectations. He wants to be the best in the world. And if he wants to throw a little fit, whatever, throw a fit. I don't give a damn.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you agree? Maybe.
I just think you might disagree.
You might disagree with that, but I'm okay with support sportsmanship. Freaking throw a fit if you want to.
Right. I'm okay with that too, I guess. I can, out of all the calls that could have been called differently, I feel like that's something that.
So are you going caution in two? Are you going shot clock, or what are you going?
Probably, you know. So I did read a lot of Twitter personalities basically insinuating that Jaden had his track shoes on and what happened last night was a crime. I don't agree with that.
Okay.
I really don't. It wasn't a crime, but I just see some areas where they could at least the shot clock, at the very least the shot clock.
Sure. So you're not making the caution in two call.
Yeah, no, maybe, but it just wasn't criminal, but I do think that something could have been done. I do think they could have made it. I mean, he was able to wrestle. I mean, even in Jaden's interview, he kind of alluded to that. It's like, yeah, I'm paraphrasing, but he basically said, of course I was stalling. I was doing whatever I had to do to stay out there and win.
Yeah.
And I'm in, you know what I mean? So,
sure.
Anyhow.
So I guess I could have seen shot clock. I think the caution two may have been excessive. You know, if you're David Taylor, you got 2 minutes on an injured guy. You absolutely have to go get that takedown. You know what
I think made it harder?
I might have been throwing the fit. If I'm him, I might be throwing a fit too. I'm not, you know.
I'll tell you what I think gave him a harder time than the perceived stalling by Jaden.
The perspiration?
Slippery, dude. It was slippery.
I mean, the guy sweats so much, so what are you going to do?
David Taylor, I mean, out of anybody in American wrestling, who needs handles more than David Taylor?
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, he needs handles and levers because he's up on the head, he's on the elbow, he's on the ankles, he's turning corners, he's switching directions. I mean, he's the last guy that needs – I mean, that was a sweaty mess those last two
months. That was crazy, right?
I think that made it harder for him than the perceived stalling, which I can understand.
Yeah. I was actually thinking about this because there was so much perspiration on the mat, Tommy. I was kind of thinking about it like, well, that's got to suck for Jaden too, right?
But he knows how to wrestle.
That's what I came to the conclusion of, right? It's like Anthony Robles without the leg, right? Anthony Robles gets to wrestle guys with two legs every day, and his partners never get to wrestle someone with one leg. Jaden Cox gets to wrestle with his nasty sweatiness every single day, and no one else gets to compete with someone with that much nasty sweatiness, right?
It's true, though. I mean, you're right.
It's so true. So,
anyways, great series. Great for wrestling.
That was awesome. So, man, you know, I had a hard time with this. Cause obviously, I'm a huge Jaden fan. I've known him since a kid. But David Taylor is also one of my favorite wrestlers. So, it's like, man, I had a really challenge. Like, I was cheering for Jaden, but it was hard. Because, David's been out now, 4 years? And he still hasn't made a team. And you know, he's proved that he's one of the best, right?
Right.
And not only in the nation, but in the world. And so, you know, is there a monkey on his back now? Is this like, shit, I can get to the finals, but I can't win type of thing?
I don't think that's necessarily the case, but I don't think he's mentally affected by it, but you and I both know, Ben, I think that you can only be in your absolute prime for, let's call it, 3 to 4 years.
Yeah.
You know, and David is in his prime. He's not in the twilight of his prime, but he's in the middle of his prime, and he hasn't been to the World Championships yet. So that's obviously got to bother him a little bit, yeah. But not in a way where he's got like a mental hurdle. Yeah. I think in my mind.
So if they go 80, they go 75, 80, 85, 90 next year, which, you know, from rumors, that's where they're going, right?
Right.
Cox goes 90, right? Taylor goes 85. Dake goes up to 80 probably, and Burrow stays at 75.
It would be insane.
And they all make the team, and I guess the monkey's off Dake's back too, because he still hasn't made a team, and he's one more year than Taylor is out. So he's what, 5 years out now?
Right.
And obviously, you know, he's had the best wrestler in the world standing in his way. So, you know, no excuse for those guys, but those guys obviously are both in tough situation with world-class competitors that they have to beat to make the world team.
You want to hear an amazing statistic, and I know he's a bigger man, generally speaking, but Jaden is 4-2 versus Kyle Dake and David Taylor.
That's pretty impressive.
Well, the only guy that has a record like that that's better is Jordan Burroughs.
Yeah, it is.
He's been on the mat. He's been on the mat with Kyle Dake and Magic Man 6 times, and he's been victorious 4 of them.
It's pretty impressive. Yeah, and you know what? Obviously, Jaden is very large for 86 kg, but he didn't look that much bigger than David last night.
No, David's looking great. I mean,
David's looking big for. I mean, he's looking solid for that weight class. And I had a few idiots comment. You know, Flo made that post that, hey, these guys were 50 pounds apart 2 years ago. Well, they weren't really 50 pounds apart, right? They're just screwed by the system that is the stupid weight classes of UWW. I mean, yeah. You know, it's 63 to 89 is just this gap that's so gigantic that David was killing himself to make 163 for forever. And so, you know, he was never really that small. He obviously forced himself to be that small because there was nowhere else to go. Yeah. And then Jaden was not very big for 211. And so, you know, when there was an option. So that was kind of over-dramatized, I think. But I had a few idiots on my Twitter saying, oh, I bet Taylor got on PEDs. It's like, dude, he probably gained 10 pounds. I mean, right? Yep. From non-weight cutting weight.
Similar weight class stuff happened to me in my career. I had to wrestle. I cut down to 211, and Chris Pendleton chose not to make 85 kilos. So he and I were in the finals of the Olympic Trials mini tournament, a heavyweight NCAA champ versus a 174.
One, damn, that's crazy, right?
Yeah. Wow. It's just, you have that.
So by, what's that, by order of operations, you've got some wins over me.
Oh, yeah. Transitive theory works well in my favor. With Ben Askren. I mean, I'm just, it works well.
Transitive theory. There we go. Oh, man. Wow. We're well over halfway through the show, and we haven't even got off the Taylor Cox match.
Yeah, because the world team trials, for me and you on a personal level, is probably it's just what I want to talk about the most.
Yeah, of course.
You know what I mean? And they went so well. It's like this could be 3 episodes. You know what I mean?
Okay, so last thought on 86 kg, and we do absolutely have to move on at some point. We haven't even talked about the mini part. We're definitely not getting everything tonight.
I think we should just stick with the finals, dude.
Just the finals, for sure. Okay, so last thought on 86 kg. Where's Jaden place in the world?
If he's healthy.
Let's assume he's healthy.
If he's healthy, you got Sadulayev going up. I think yes, Donny Chariti, even though David just freaking railroaded him.
Yeah.
I still think he's the guy to beat in my mind. I watched him wrestle. It was either the Asian Games or like some tournament like a month after or a month and a half after World Cup. He's a stud. He's a top 5 guy, no different than he was last year. I think he's wrestling for a medal or better.
Okay. And that's kind of where I would see him at. You know, I don't want to put him head and shoulders above everybody because he's not. You know, Gidea is supposed to be up there, going to be a tough competitor. Sharifov's still around. Yeah, Giant Chariti's still around. But he's wrestling for a medal, in my opinion. You know, what color that's going to be, I'm not sure yet.
Right. I'm with you. I'm following.
Okay, so let's cut back down to the little guys at 57 kg. I will tell you, I was shocked to see Gilman make the finals. I didn't really think he was that good. You know, that obviously he's good, but you know, when you looked at the bracket, it's like, wow, there's a lot of really tough dudes in that bracket. So he makes the finals, and you know, I kind of got into the rivalry of it, even though I hate both Hawkeyes. You know, there was a lot of trash being talked there. It's Ramos left them a year ago. He was kind of Gilman's coach in a way. They're facing off in the final. And so I was kind of excited for this match, even though I don't really care for either of them, just because of the implications of it.
Yeah, no, it's good. Good. I didn't get to watch any of it, but I was shocked that Gilman made it out. I mean, he beat a number of NCAA champs.
I believe it was three NCAA champs.
Tomasello, Megalutis, Ramos. Did he beat anybody else?
Oh yeah, that was the final. And then he beat Darren Cruz first round. So four.
Four champs. There you go.
Yeah. So, you know, he was just a little bit better than Ramos at Ramosing. You know what I'm saying? I mean, obviously, they're coached by the same guys. They wrestled in the same room. Their style's very similar. And this is, it's kind of, I kind of thought it was going to be the exact opposite, right? Where Ramos was just a little bit bigger, a little bit stronger, a little bit older, a little bit smarter. And right. He'd kind of bully him. But it was almost the exact opposite way around.
Yep. I agree. I mean, I was surprised that Gilman looked bigger.
Yeah. I definitely was, because Ramos was obviously a 33-pounder. And, you know, he cut down, and I thought he was pretty large for that weight class. But, yeah, I mean, Gilman looked as big, if not bigger. And he was felt like he was more physical.
Right.
That being said, I still think he's going to have trouble at the world level, just kind of like Ramos did. Not nearly the diversity of offense that some of our other world team members have. But I have been proven wrong before, so I guess we will just we'll wait and see on him.
I agree with everything you just said. I mean, I don't see it, but I think it's, you know, it's good that it was a cool story. It was cool to see, but I think he's our, you know, toughest shot at meddling by a mile at the world.
Yep, agreed. Okay, so did you get to watch Stieber versus Maple 1?
No, I did not.
Okay.
I know 9-8. It was last-second takedown.
It was awesome. Stieber Maple 2 is kind of a – Stieber kind of runs him over. Right. Maple went to the main tournament, so maybe he's gassed up at that point. So Maple goes up 6-0. And then I want to say Stieber got back to 6-2. And then it's one of my favorite moves. Johnny Thompson called it the snake. We call it the honey badger in Wisconsin.
They call Maple, it cowcatcher in Ohio.
Cowcatcher, okay. Maple had it so tight, I thought Logan was getting buried. And he sneaks out of it to go down. I think it was 8-2. He went down 8-2.
Right.
And then just chips his way, and got the winning takedown. This guy's clutch. I mean, he did this how many times in World Championships last year, right?
He's done it a lot.
Two or three out of the five matches, I want to say. And just gets the winning takedown with like 6 seconds left, and that was kind of, I think that momentum carried over into the very strongly into the second match. And Maple just had nothing that second match.
Right.
Okay. 65 kg. Another one where we got two guys from the same college going at it. And, you know, obviously we talked about Gilman and Ramos. And then we, you know, now we got Frank the Tank and Zane. Obviously, Frank just took off for Virginia Tech to coach. This was, you know, kind of just a throwdown scrap the whole time. I mean, neither of these guys has a lot of finesse, right?
No.
Not at all. It's just like two bulls going at it.
Right. Yeah, it was a good little series. I only got to watch one of the matches, match two. Okay. So. But, you know, the thing we can talk about is Jordan Oliver getting popped.
Yeah. I actually called it because, you know, they said he was out and they weren't saying nothing. And one of my kids asked me, I said, hey, if nobody's talking, he probably got popped. And sure enough, done.
Yep.
So he's probably looking at a 2-year suspension unless he can somehow prove that he's guilty or innocent beyond a shadow of a doubt. But obviously, USADA. Right. Makes that challenging sometimes. So, you know, the other thing, the thing I was going to say about this Zane and Molinaro is, you know, Molinaro's been so successful with his left-handed high crotch that he seems to get on everyone. And I want to say he scored it twice in the series, maybe only once. It was either once or twice. But Zane was really successful. And, you know, I don't know if that's because he's practicing all the time, but he was really, really, really successful in shutting that down. And he kind of the only offense that Frank had, especially in the last match, was that front head pinch. And he went to it a few times. I believe he scored all four of his points in the last match off the front head pinch. And so Zane did a great job at shutting Frank down and you know, making it a simple match and getting his offense we need to do and getting his scores. And, Zane's another one where, you know, he's not crazy diverse. But, you know, one of my coaches once told me, if you can't see why they're winning, it's probably because they're really, really freaking strong. And I found that to be pretty good advice. And that's what I think. I think Zane just has to be ridiculously powerful.
I mean, I would say that that's even more evident when he's wrestling in the top position in folk style, because there's nothing overly technical about what he's doing other than grinding his opponent to a pulp.
To a pulp.
So, yeah, I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. So, we didn't talk about Stieber's prospects world. Obviously, we're going to go what he can do as good as he wants, gold medal maybe. And then we got to talk about Zane.
No doubt about it.
Okay.
No doubt about it.
So what do you think about Zane's prospects for the World Championships?
I would say Zane is no different than Molinaro. Molinaro wrestled good, got fifth at the Olympics. I think that there's a little bit more wood to chop for Zane. His scoring potential isn't the same as Logan's is at that weight class, and it's probably a little deeper on a world level because it's a traditional Olympic weight. So a lot of better guys tend to hang out in that weight class. So I'm going to go ahead and say that I don't think it's a guarantee that he's going to be wrestling for a medal.
Yeah.
I'd say he's top 10 in the world.
Yeah, I would say that too. You know, I kind of almost he's a little more diverse. He's tough on top, but almost the same boat as Gilman, where he's strong, he's powerful, great position, good gas tank, and I haven't seen him right against the top international level competitors. So it is hard to make that prediction when you haven't seen these guys go against
them. The only thing I'll say is I don't think it's quite the same as Gilman. I mean, he's a cadet world champion. He's wrestled a lot of freestyle. I just think he's got a better shot than Gilman, but little bit similar in what you're saying. Just I can see some limitations technically, and we're being – I mean, these guys are animals, but I'm talking about the world –
We're talking about the best in the world, so we got
to
be
careful. Right, so I just think he's got a little bit more development to go here, and I'm sure he'll get it, but I just think that he's not quite there to go wrestle for a world medal this year.
Yeah, definitely. All right, I'm sorry. Well, you know, we're kind of moving fast, but we're barely going to get through the damn finals. So, I know the Dake Burrows series is going to take us a long time, so I'm trying to, you know, kind of go for that. Green Kennedy, this is another one where it's not overly competitive. You know, I do think it's so impressive how Kennedy's been able to be successful at essentially three weight classes, right? He made the world team at 61.
I was thinking the same thing.
Holy crap, that's impressive.
Yep.
Wow.
Well, he's just a very technically sound wrestler that competes hard, and, you know, he hasn't been able to find his way to the top of the pile, but – yeah, he's successful. Actually, Jimmy made a world team, didn't he?
Yeah, at 61 kg.
Yeah. Yeah, he's done a good job. You know, isn't it surprising that he didn't go down to 65 kilos?
Yeah, I don't know what the deal was there. I think he's maybe training out of Penn State, so maybe that was the deal. You know, I know David Taylor married his sister, and I think Jimmy's out there at Penn State.
I didn't even know that he left.
Yeah, so maybe that's the deal. I'm not really sure.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So I said this to him this morning. I didn't on my Facebook Live. Green is one of those guys who's just so much better at freestyle than he was at folk style. I mean, he was good in college, but he, you know, compared to what he's doing right now, very, very, very underwhelming.
Yep.
Yeah, so I, man, I just, I think the sky's the limit. I could see him winning a world title. I really could.
I could. I could see. I mean, I think he's going to be in a medal match at least.
Yeah, 100%. He's just so proficient at scoring from his positions. You know, he doesn't let people take the match where he doesn't want them to. You know, he keeps it in his wheelhouse. He scores really well off of his turns. So I could see him having a you know, I mean, I could see him winning a world title. I don't know that he's going to, but I could, you know, if you told me it happened, I'm not going to be totally shocked at all.
No, no doubt. No doubt. I'm with you.
Okay. So let's get to the series of all series, because as good as Molinaro and Zane was, as good as Cox Taylor was, Burrow's take is better.
This is epic for the next few
epic.
Decades.
Totally.
It's epic. One of those deals like you've heard about the Kemp. Who was it? Kemp and there's just so about these old school rivalries.
Yeah.
You know that just are talked about for ages. This is one.
This is one of them for sure. So where do you start in the first match? I guess that makes the most sense. The freaking chest wrap that
unbelievable
that Dake hit on him. How much power he got out of that?
It was a King Kong move, dude. It was like it was King Kong strength.
King Kong.
How else? Yeah, it was 100%. Just incredible.
Yeah, I mean, I was blown away. I thought 1,000% for sure, Burrow's gonna get him off the mat there, and somehow he defied gravity.
He defied
gravity, kept his feet on the ground, and freaking launched him.
It was insane.
Totally insane. So you know, that was kind of the story of that match. Burrow's chips away, but you know, it was essentially just a bunch of pushouts. And Dake takes his first win ever over
First win ever. But I think that even though Dake won, I don't think that anything was that match one reminded me of the Open, where it's like, to me, nothing's been decided. There has not been a separation or a point of differentiation between these guys. It was varying moments. I mean, Burrow's probably created more action only because he had to, though, because he was down early in that match. But it was just, there was no point of differentiation to me. So it was a win by Dig, but it's like I'm still looking for who we should be sending to the Worlds, and neither guy has stepped up and said, I should be going to the Worlds. Like, I'm the guy, not him. You know, you're at the Open, there was no separation. And then even after match one, I just was not convinced of who should be going, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, 1,000%. And honestly, we got Burrow. He's going, and he won it fair and square. But there's not a lot of separation between these guys. There's almost none, right?
There's almost none. But I do think that by the time we got through all three matches, the guy that won is the guy we should be sending by a very small margin. That's the guy we should be sending.
1,000%. I totally agree. And you know, I actually did. Like I said, I did a camp the last 2 days, and you know, one of the kids asked me who's going to win, Burrow's or Dake, and I said, "Here's who I think's going to win. I think Burrow's going to win, and I think he's going to win because success is a skill, and he ain't ready to give it up yet." And there was just something about the look in his eyes that just said, hey, you know, he's not the same guy he was. And I actually just watched Burrow's Dake from 13 in I think it was in Oklahoma City. And Burrow definitely does not have the same pop he did in 13. There's absolutely no doubt about that, right? I mean, he didn't score one clean double leg in three matches. And so he's definitely a different wrestler than he was when he was on that incredible streak. But I think he's now figured out, hey, I got to be a different wrestler. And he's got some really amazing – his defense is underrated. I mean, his defense is freaking fantastic. His hand fighting is awesome.
His swing single's getting pretty damn good.
Yes, and his single leg is getting really good. So
do you think he actually has a good trapped arm, or do you think that was just more of an opportunity – or has he developed like a trapped arm gut series?
Yeah, I mean, we haven't really seen him use it before that, but man, it looked good to me.
There's no doubt that the swing single is something that he's been molding and adapting. He got it twice on Kyle in very pivotal moments, and that's kind of maybe a reaction to him knowing that he's a half a step slower and not as powerful as he once was with that double leg.
Yeah, and you know what?
Michael Jordan perfected the fadeaway jumper
exactly.
when he couldn't go to the bucket as hard as he did in his early years.
You know, and I was going to say that's the mark of a true great, like an all-time great. You know, that streak Burroughs went on was one of the best streaks of all time, right? But the mark of a true great is they're able to reinvent themselves over and over and over again. And that's what we're seeing with Burroughs is he's absolutely not the same guy. If anyone tries to tell you that he is, they're wrong, okay?
He basically said that in the interview. Did you listen?
Listen to the interview. That's my wife's favorite part is the interview, so I definitely listened to that. What did he say? I can't remember what he said.
He said, I'm probably not as fast as I once was. You know, he kind of alluded to like acknowledging that. He's like, but I'm smarter.
Yeah.
And I know what I got to do. And, you know, I've perfected other skills and that's how I'm going to stay on top. So he's basically backhandedly saying, I am not what I once was, but I'm still going to be a champion. That's not going to change.
Yeah.
And so he's kind of like resigned himself to that. So I'm still going to win though.
Yeah.
Because I'm getting better in these ways. I'm older, I'm wiser, I've got different skills now, you know, I'm a better freeze, you know, he's alluding to it.
Yeah, and Tommy, that's the mark of a true great, is someone who's able to reinvent themselves over and over and over again and have the same success at the
end. I said this after Rio. Jordan Burroughs can re-engage his mind and his spirit into wrestling, make the world team, and go to Paris and win the world championships on a personal level. It makes me like his story more than if he won gold in Rio and just kept on keeping on. Because the man got humbled. He got humbled, and he's choosing to stay in the fight for no other reason than he loves it.
Yeah.
And he was able to gather himself again and get himself back on top. So if he can pull this off in Paris, I personally will like his story more by virtue of what's happened in the past 12 months, not less.
1,000%. Yeah, 1,000%. Hey, I don't want to put Dake down too much. I do kind of like picking on Dake a little bit, but was the third period flop, was that LeBron-esque? Because it sure didn't look like he got hit that hard.
Yeah, no, it was a floppy flop.
What's he doing?
Here's the thing. It was a flop because there's a lot of other times prior to that where he was staying tough when they should have been making calls, perhaps.
So you think Burroughs' hands to the face was egregious enough to have calls made against it?
No, I don't think that. Ah! I mean,
what are you trying to say?
I don't know. I just don't think it's as egregious as. And I'm not talking about the rules. I'm just talking about promoting action. Someone that's trying to score is Kyle squatting down to where his butt's almost touching the mat, and he's in a 3-point stance and not moving.
Yeah,
you know that's just as, you know, in terms of creating action, you know, that's just as perhaps negligent as, you know, the hands to the face. Which personally, I mean, I guess I've put my hands. It's a setup to me.
I thought you could do hands to the face. I love
what?
That. I mean, you can't poke someone in the eye, but I'd love a good palm to the forehead.
A palm to the forehead is a setup.
Damn straight it is.
It's a setup.
Yeah. It's one of the best setups.
It's a setup to create points. I feel like that's why Jordan Burroughs does that. I mean, he's never been a guy who shy away from scoring points.
No, he's a scoring machine. So obviously sky's the limit for Jordan Burroughs. We know that. You're predicting this is going to be the best team in a long time. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah. Cause okay. I think you got medals at, with Stieber, Green, Burroughs, Cox, if he's healthy.
Well, if he's not healthy, Taylor's probably going and Taylor can get a medal.
That's correct. So that weight class, Snyder and Gwiz. I mean, I think you're going to have six guys. And even I could even throw Rutherford in there.
I'm not sold on Gwiz yet. I think he's good. I'd like to see him have some more success internationally before I'm ready to throw him in the medal contender category.
Well, I think he's a notch above Rutherford at this point in time.
Okay. So that's fair enough. Hey, so my wife was harassing me about – she's watching the trials finals. You know, and we had talked about that. Are we going to Paris? Or we said no on that one, correct?
Well, let's look into it. I mean,
okay. I'll have my wife do some research.
Cool.
All right. I'm likely fighting August 18th. And so I did check, Tommy. It is the 21st to the 26th. So I'm thinking likely the trials finals are, the freestyle portion. And, you know, I don't want to be sexist and or anti-Grecoist, but I'm a freestyle wrestling fan. I can't get hugely into either of the other ones. So I would be going for the – I think what the last 3 days is freestyle. So the 24th.
It would be fun, dude. There's no doubt about it.
So we'll look into it. Might cover it. Maybe live on T-Row and Funky.
I mean, it's something we should be considering. There's no doubt about that.
Cool. So, hey, so let's do this, Tommy. Let's get together. Let's find a time later, maybe Wednesday or Thursday this week that works, and we can tape part two. We can talk about the mini tournament, and we can talk about the juniors division. Sound good?
I'm in. Sounds good, brother.
All right, Tommy. Have a great night.
We'll see ya.
See ya.
You are listening to the T-Row and Funky Show, brought to you by Defend Soap. Defend what you have built.